J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
Okay, we go back live to the Esquire Theater with the Breakfast Club. J.C., do you have a moment to talk with a good friend of yours?
Yeah, I understand we have Super Dave Osborne on the phone. Soup, how are you?
Okay, Soup, how are you? We got to relay this thing. Let's try something else. Hold on.
What are we doing now?
Hello, Soup, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Soup, can you hear us?
Okay, JC, it looks like we won't be able to do
this. I'll tell you what, then. You're going to have to apologize, and maybe we'll try it some other time, because that won't work. That's the voice, ladies and gentlemen, of Super Dave. Just tell him to say something to the crowd here at the Esquire Theater, because the system won't work.
Okay, Super, are you there?
Yeah, I can barely hear you.
Okay, say hello to the folks down at the Esquire.
What?
Say hello to the folks at the Esquire.
I'm on the air?
You're on the air. Don't cuss.
JC?
Yeah!
Can you hear me?
Yes!
Oh, I guess you can't hear me, JC, because you're at the Esquire Theater. So, I guess we'll just record something here. The only way we can do this is, you ask me some questions. I'll leave a pause, and, I'll answer the question. I'll just have to guess what you ask me. So, what's your first question?
Gosh, how are things in California?
Yes, that's right. Our show does debut tonight at 10 o'clock. 9 o'clock your time, and it's going to be sensational. Thank you for asking.
I got a question. You ever seen a grown man naked?
Melissa Manchester is our special guest. Oh, I don't want this to turn into a complete plug call. It's going to sound like the only reason I called is to push the fact that our show debuts tonight. So you'll have to ask me something else.
Okay, well, have you ever been to a Turkish steam bath?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do think it's one of our best shows. I'm really proud of it, and we do a tremendous stunt to close the show. Ask me something else. I don't want to talk about the show.
You ever had a dog get on your leg? And
yes, it's going to be our best season. Ask me something about yourself, will you please?
Gosh, did you think that that rash would ever go away?
Well, you all have to answer that. Did you have a great time when you visited our show or not?
All right,
we had a lot of fun having you there.
Get rid of him. All right, Super Dave Osborne right there on the Showtime Cable Network.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Thursday, May 4th, 2023. You are at jcontheline.com. I miss that guy. God, do I miss that guy. You have no idea how nice Bob Einstein was to me over the years. Bob Einstein, of course, Super Dave. It was shocking to me when Super Dave died that people just were finding out at that time that he is the brother of Albert Brooks. And it was just an amazing story because their father, a lot of you already know this, but their father was a like 40s and 50s radio star by the name of Park Your Carcass. That was his character's name, Park Your Carcass. And my mother used to say that to me all the time. You sit down and park your carcass. But that was him as a comedy guy. And, you know, he was on radio, the old Fred Allen radio show, which was basically the equivalent of Ed Sullivan, except on radio. Before it was TV. Sometime in the 60s, I believe, and if everybody is familiar with the Friars Club, the Friars Club used to do specials on NBC back in the 60s, and it was basically all these comedians, mostly the old-time comedians, you know, Jack Benny, Milton Berle, but then they got, like, you know, Don Rickles in there and Foster Brooks. And the specials were, they were funny. I didn't like the way they were edited because there was like a lot of phony looking laughter and stuff, but they were still fun. But before these things were televised, like I said, it was back in the 60s, and this Park Your Carcass guy is sitting up on the dais with all of these other comedians, and they're doing a show. Guy gets up, does his act as Park Your Carcass, goes over and sits down and has a massive heart attack sitting on the dais. They start calling for a doctor. Somebody comes running out of the crowd who's got some sort of medical background. Their father, Super Dave and Albert Brooks' father, is sitting up there slumped over a chair. And apparently some guy, one of the doctors, one of the people who responded on this thing before the ambulance got there, grabbed a lamp and pulled the cord out of the lamp and then tried to start his heart with the cord, with the electrical shock from the cord. And it wasn't successful. He ended up dying. And all that Super Dave ever said about it was, now keep in mind, this is a show business family, and probably no better exemplification of a show business family than this. They're like, well, your father died on stage. I mean, what do you think about that? And it's like, hey, he finished his act first. God, got your priorities in order there. But that's how they viewed it. That's when you come from a family full of comedy. All right, this is May the 4th be with you. I am not a Star Wars person. Sorry, but I am going to play you something here in just a couple of seconds that you're probably going to like. And a lot of people haven't heard this, by the way, but I'll play this thing coming up. Let's address the elephant in the room. As I was saying two nights ago, when the Cardinals lost, Cardinals went into last night's game with a four-game losing streak, having lost 11 of their last 13. And Shohei Ohtani, and I believe I was mispronouncing it yesterday. I think I was saying Shohei. It's not Shohei. Shohei Ohtani comes out there last night and has, what, like eight strikeouts after three innings? K, over and over and over again. They finally knock him out of the box. Not an easy thing to do. Jordan Hicks comes in, gets a couple of outs, but can't finish the inning. They got to bring in Helsley early, and that prompted a controversial decision by Ollie Marmol last night as to whether or not he should keep Ryan Helsley in the game, not only for the remainder of the seventh inning, but also the eighth, because he didn't throw very many pitches. And people are like, well, he's never gone more than an inning and a third, and he's not going to do it tonight. So they yank him out of the game. And then our relievers, after that, pitched perfect baseball in that they did not miss a bat. Cardinals struck out 13 times last night against Ohtani alone. Jordan Hicks, not exactly dazzling. He didn't stink up the place. He got two outs, but then he basically negated all the good work he did by walking a guy and then the hit batsman. Something started happening that you don't hear very often at Busch Stadium, at least not anything directed at the Cardinals, and that was booing. And the booing was getting louder and louder, and finally when the game was over, a lot of people, I think, just stayed around because they figured, okay, this game is lost. And by the way, I was looking at the TV. There was nobody here with me last night, and I just kept saying to myself, four runs are not going to win this game. I almost put it up on social media. Four runs are not going to win this game, and boy, was I right. So it's very clear the Cardinals are going to lose, and people were like, I want to stay around because when this game's over, I'm going to boo, and I'm going to boo loud, and boy, did they. Wow. So now we have lost 12 of our last 14. It's 13 strikeouts. Now, again, it's against one of the premier pitchers in baseball, but that doesn't explain the 11 losses and four in a row. And so Ollie does his traditional post-game news conference and pretty much doubles down.
Every coach that's in that clubhouse wakes up and loses sleep over how to improve what's going on at the moment. And that's the only thing that crosses your mind every minute of the day. That's why this organization has been good for a long time, is because everyone wakes up with the same thing in mind. So to think that when you say that the fan base is, yeah, we want to deliver for this city. That's what you wake up for every day. And trust me, we don't mind the accountability. That's also why we wake up every day, because it drives us knowing that if we do well, things go well. And if you don't, people are pissed. That drives me. It drives everybody in that clubhouse. So if you think other people are more frustrated than within these walls, you're crazy. Thank you.
Now, to be fair, I can't imagine a better answer about what's going on right now, as he characterizes it, than that answer that Ollie Marmol gave last night. It was honest. It was straightforward. It was sincere. It was genuine. It was a little bit heartfelt. And that's all great. The problem is, it still doesn't fix anything. Now, you know, I've been posting for the last couple of nights that Mazalek and Ollie got to feel like they're on the hot seat, particularly Ollie Marmol's got to feel the pressure from this whole thing. And one of my Facebook followers posted something that was intended to be sarcastic. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm sure they're really looking forward to getting rid of him, considering he won the division last year. It's like, well, obviously I get what you're saying, but just for fun. Google the number of managers, and you don't even have to do just baseball either. You can do the NFL. You can do hockey. Google all the names of guys who got bounced either 1 year or 2 years after winning a national championship. There's a lot of them. So it's not unprecedented for me to say what I said. And also, this tells me that that person doesn't know the DeWitts. Bill DeWitt, especially senior, does not get off on the idea of appearing to be compromised or embarrassed. They don't like that. And I could go into a long dissertation, but it would require that I tell you things that were told to me in confidence, so I can't really do that. But yeah, they don't like situations like this, and they don't tolerate them very long. So the day game today, the rain that was originally predicted is going to hold back now. By the way, next week, it's going to turn summer. We got the storms coming in overnight and probably a good portion of the day tomorrow. It looks like the rain will be out of here in time for the Cardinals game tomorrow night if you happen to have tickets. And then Sunday, Jesus, 85 degrees, and it looks like low to mid 80s every day next week, at least through Wednesday or Thursday. So you've been wanting the warm weather, you're going to get it. And watch what happens on Sunday, the first really, really warm day in St. Louis. People have been going, oh, I hate this cold weather. When is it going to warm up? Watch all the people driving around on Sunday with their windows rolled up and the air conditioning on. It's like, I can't wait for it to warm up. Jeez, it's hot. Turn on the AC. All right, let's talk robot umpires. We've been hearing about this for a while. And I have to tell you, you know, you got that center field camera and you got the box. And you can see all the calls that that don't get made properly. So what they're here, let me play this report. I forget what this. I think this might have been from CBS. I think it might have been CBS News. Here you go.
Robot umpires are getting closer to reality. It's being tested out at the AAA level, just one step away from the majors. Last night, the Minnesota Twins AAA team got their first taste. And here's how it works: cameras track the pitch, send data to a server, which then sends the results to a human umpire who then relays what the call is. The players aren't all on board with the change, but they agree it does benefit the hitters more than the pitchers.
I want to swing at strikes, and the zone doesn't change. You know, it feels like it stays very consistent, so you can know the zone a little bit better.
Usually things like this, if they get to AAA, then that means they're pretty close to making it to the big leagues. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see this in the big leagues here the next year or so.
Commissioner Rob Manfred says Major League Baseball plans to try robot umpires next year, but it's not clear if they'll go to a fully automated system or just use it to review strike calls when a team challenges.
Seems a little absurd that a man is going to be standing behind home plate with a mask and a chest protector watching the pitches come in, but he's going to be told what the pitch is. Sure seems like makes the job a lot easier. You can just pull up a rocking chair and just sit there and wait for the computer to tell you what the call is. I don't think the umpires are going to like it much. Awful lot of changes coming down with regard to Major League Baseball. A lot of changes. I think some of them, I think speeding up the game a little bit has been a good thing. I don't like much of the rest of it, including the goddamn DH. All right, I have a confession to make. You know, I try to keep myself in reasonably good shape. I got a little bit of a gut on me in the last couple of years. You know, I talked about this before. I did great during the pandemic. No problem at all. I didn't gain any weight, and the pandemic ended, and all of a sudden I put on 10 pounds. And I have not been successful in getting the 10 pounds off. But, you know, I ride my bike, do a lot of walking around down here. You know, the weather's nice 12 months a year. I'm playing baseball now twice a week, play on Wednesdays and on Sunday morning. And I'm not just standing around, you know, I'm pitching, which is, you know, there's a lot of exertion that's involved in that. I eat well, a lot of fruit, a lot of vegetables, a lot of fish. God, when we moved here, all I did was eat grouper for about the first 6 months. And then you're like, okay, grouper is really, really good, but man, I got to eat something else. So the point I'm trying to make here is, you know, I try to keep myself in reasonably good condition. I'm married to somebody who's 22 years younger than me. All right. It's like, you don't want to be stumbling around like an old man. Okay. This is why I was surprised, although it's like they say, you can't pick your parents. I was very, very surprised to find out a couple of weeks ago that I have diabetes. I'm like, where did that come from? Well, my mom and my dad had it. And so, something I've been making fun of for the last couple of years is that stupid, Ozempic. I hate their commercials. I hate that song. I didn't used to, but I do now. These dippy people in the commercial. I just hate the entire thing. Well, as of last Thursday, I became their latest customer. My doctor put me on Ozempic. And one of the side effects of bringing down your A1C is that you have a tendency to lose weight. In some cases, over the process of, maybe a year and a half, some people have reported losing up to 20, 25% of their body weight. We're talking 10, 15, sometimes 25 pounds, sometimes more than that, you know, spread over the course of a year and a half. And so I say to the doctor, well, how does that work? I'm like, well, you know, you feel full, you're not as hungry, you fill up faster. I'm like, all right, whatever. Gave myself that first shot last Thursday. I am telling you, it's like my esophagus closed up. You buy one of those, like 6-inch long submarine sandwiches somewhere, eating like a quarter of it, and I'm full. It's like the joke they say, before this, my last chance at a smoking hot body is probably cremation. Good morning, everybody. But it's going to be interesting to see, because I started taking this stuff, and I'm telling you, by the next day, I wasn't hungry anymore. And then, of course, we've found out in recent months that half of Hollywood is taking this stuff because they know it makes them skinny. Like, do you have diabetes? No, but I would be interested in losing about 20 pounds. How would you like to be Jenny Craig? They reportedly told employees they're shutting down operations after 40 years in business. They tried shopping the company to some investors, but nobody was interested because everybody can see where this is going. These drugs for diabetes are replacing diet and exercise. And there's just a little voice in the back of your head that says, that doesn't seem right. What's I don't know. But I'll keep you posted as this thing moves along, because a lot of us are going to be in this boat soon, whether we like it or not. And like I said, you know, both my mom and my dad had it, so I may not have stood much of a chance. Or maybe, as the doctor said, maybe if you hadn't led the kind of lifestyle that you lead by eating good foods and getting exercise, maybe this would have happened 20 years ago. What's happening with Jamie Foxx? All right. He goes into the hospital almost a month ago, and everybody's very hush-hush about everything. The longer he was in the hospital, the more questions started to be asked. And like 2-3 days ago, a lot of his friends are like, Jamie really needs your prayers, man. He really needs your prayers. One of his best friends tweeted something along the lines of, come on, man, you got to be tough. This is no way to go out. Now, if somebody's saying this is no way to go out, that tells me it's pretty serious. There's widespread speculation that Jamie Foxx had a stroke and may be suffering some sort of after effects. His daughter said he is in the hospital because of a health complication. That doesn't sound too good. So last night I posted a picture of him on social media and said, I don't know, it's not looking good. He may not be here by this time tomorrow. Well, my friend Les Trent, who is a great guy, and we've got the whole Buffalo thing. He worked in Buffalo before he went to Inside Edition. And if you watch Inside Edition, you know who Les Trent is. Great guy, good reporter. You know, the standard more and more is becoming not are you good, but do you do anything to embarrass yourself? It's like you can just like pick out somebody like Ken Earhart. Let's just say Ken Earhart, right? Solid guy, good meteorologist. Takes lots of chances on the air. He's a funny guy. He is really funny. He likes to goof around. And he gets off some great lines, and he's really, really quick. And he's a good guy. I worked with him at Channel 4 for at least a couple of years. And, you know, I can honestly say that Kent doesn't do anything to embarrass himself. Then you get some of these newbies that are all over TV.
I'm Brent Solomon. That disturbing discovery happening this morning at the Principia Lower School. I'm Brent Solomon.
I haven't heard that. Oh, wow, geez, I just snorted. And my friend Sean Bullent just loves those. Anyway, hey, Sean, here's another one.
Travis Cummings, 5, on your side. The Blues sent Vladimir Tarasenko to the New York Giants. Travis Cummings, 5, on your side.
All right, Travis, thanks.
The bland leading the bland right there. All right, so back to the Jamie Foxx story. I almost forgot where I was there. So Les says, I don't think there's anything to this story. I think you got this wrong. I'm like, well, I'll tell you what. Your sources are probably better than mine. I mean, you're in New York, and you are, you know, part of this Inside Edition show, and so you probably have great sources. Plus, you're black. That probably helps. And so I will defer to you. So if you're telling me that your information about Jamie Foxx is not as dismal and the messages are not intended to be as cryptic as I took them, okay, I will defer to you. So there may be nothing to the story, but we'll see. And it's not your imagination. Kids are stupid.
The nation's report card shows very poor scores for America's eighth graders when it comes to U.S. history and civics. The assessment is sounding an alarm through the education system. Michael George tells us what the experts say is all at stake.
The latest report card shows kids' history scores are now historically low. The nation's middle schoolers are struggling to explain major themes and events in the country's past and lack a basic understanding of the way government works. Eighth grade scores in history and civics dropped to the lowest level since the 1990s, when the Department of Education started the assessments.
It sounds dramatic to say that our democracy is at stake, but I think that's not so far from the truth.
That's because history is about more than memorizing battles or presidents.
If our students don't understand the decisions that were made by other humans in the past, how can they possibly understand the world that they live in now?
According to the nation's report card, just 13% of eighth graders scored at or above proficient in history, 22% in civics.
I think they're avoiding some of the history that they don't want to teach.
The drop in history scores continues an alarming nationwide trend. Every single state has also seen a decline in math or reading scores since the start of the pandemic. Education experts blame the decline on remote pandemic learning and a lack of support for teachers.
There is a fundamental distrust of teachers. They are professionals, and we need to trust them.
With nearly a third of students unable to describe the structure or function of government, educators say this is a wake-up call to the nation. Michael George, CBS News, New York.
Now, there's a couple of things going on there. I think just in general, kids are not interested in things like history. I know that I wasn't. But you know why? I think the teachers did a shitty job. They really did. There's going to be changes in your personality and in your level of interest in things as you grow, as you mature, whatever. So when you're 14, maybe something that happened in World War II wouldn't interest you that much. All I know is I sit there, I watch the History Channel all the time, and I'm glued to the screen. I watch everything I can see. I love history. So why did I hate it so much in high school? Well, I think you already addressed it in the report. You know, you got to remember when the war, when was the War of 1812? 1815? It was, you know, just a lot of memorizing dates and things that just don't seem to be very important, especially when you're 14. But I also think, and I really, really strongly believe this, that teachers should be doing a much better job in teaching history. It's so interesting. And I just remember, you know, some dude standing up there at the front of the class just droning on about Persia, when they could be talking about things that, you know, look, boys especially like a good fight. What's a war? A war is a fight. So present it to kids in a way that stimulates them. I don't know. There's so much politics now involved in the teaching process and in the learning process that it's about the political stance and about politicians. You could say, you know, we need reading, writing, and arithmetic. I don't want none of this woke stuff. As long as we're locked in that framework, nothing's going to change. Get used to more stupid kids. Well, everybody's mad. And I mean everybody. Nobody is happy with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. If you missed it yesterday, Kate Bush. And as I said, you could go stand on a street corner outside the ballpark this afternoon and just say, ask 100 people who's Kate Bush. Name one song. Just one. If you got 4, 5, 6, maybe out of 100, I'd be surprised. Sheryl Crow, a lot of people not happy with that. I happen to be. Missy Elliott, she's a rapper. George Michael, not rock and roll. Willie Nelson, not rock and roll. Rage Against the Machine and the Spinners. Chaka Khan being recognized for a Musical Excellence Award. Bernie Taupin, Al Cooper, Don Cornelius is going to get the Ahmet Erdogan Award. November 3rd is when this happens in New York. But I did a little background on this. Listen to all these bands and tell me what they have in common, right? And you probably figured it out. These are all bands and acts that are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, keep in mind, they had to get George Michael, Kate Bush, and Missy Elliott in there this year. But they did not feel any compulsion to congratulate and recognize the work of, ready, Bad Company, Boston, Iron Maiden, Peter Frampton, Meatloaf, Smashing Pumpkins, Styx, Jethro Tull, Bryan Adams, America, Bachman Turner Overdrive, the B-52s, Blue Oyster Cult, Joe Cocker, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Emerson, Lake & Palmer, Foreigner, Grand Funk Railroad, The Guess Who, Sammy Hagar, Don Henley, INXS, Huey Lewis and the News, The Monkees, Motley Crue, Harry Nilsson, Ozzy Osbourne, Iggy Pop, Rainbow, REO Speedwagon, Scorpions, Steppenwolf, Thin Lizzy, Three Dog Night, Uriah Heep, Roger Waters, Johnny and or Edgar Winter, and the great Warren Zevon. You know, with regard to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it would be really nice if this cultural art form that we invented was better represented by people who took their job seriously. And the problem is I think that some of these people who vote take it too seriously and they overthink it, and you end up with Roger Waters sitting there going, what the fuck did I do? Jethro Tull with Ian Anderson sitting there going, what did I do wrong? So it'd be nice if the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame were better representing this musical art form, but it just isn't. And everybody's mad. Writer's strike continues. It's going to be a long haul on this one. NBC is going to pay the Tonight Show and Late Show staffers for the next 2 weeks, and Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers will pay them for a third week. Meanwhile, 58% of Americans say they support the writers. What? 42% of respondents are siding with the producers? Based on what? Greedy pricks. You have a couple of sex stories here today. Gwyneth Paltrow was asked, who's a better lover, Brad Pitt or Ben Affleck? She would not pick, but she said she had major chemistry with Brad Pitt, while Ben was, and I don't understand this one, here's the quote, Ben Affleck was technically excellent. So that tells me Brad Pitt was wild and kinky, and Ben Affleck was just bumbada, bumbada, bumbada. Maybe I have that wrong, but that's what it means to me. Let's talk a little bit about Rachel Bilson. Rachel Bilson, the first time I ever heard of her, I didn't watch The O.C., but she was part of The O.C. Very, very handsome woman. And if you want to see a good movie, The Last Kiss. The Last Kiss. Zach Braff is in this. Actually, Gwyneth Paltrow's mom is in it. Blythe Danner, bunch of other, Casey Affleck, bunch of other actresses and actors. Very, very good movie. Tony Goldwyn directed that movie. He played the villain in Ghost. Anyhow, she's in that movie, and I'm like, wow, is this woman hot? Damn. Then she made news, I don't know, it was maybe 6 months ago, maybe a year ago, something of it. She was being interviewed and said she didn't have an orgasm until she was like 30 or something. And if you do the math and count backwards on the years as to who she was with during that period, it comes up Bill Hader, formerly of Saturday Night Live, and who's winning all these awards now for Barry on cable. So apparently, I don't know who she was dating up until now, but apparently Bill Hader found the little man in the rowboat. And as a matter of fact, they broke up, I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year ago, and said, what do you miss about your relationship with Bill Hader? And her answer was, his big dick. Nice work, Billy boy. So anyhow, she's being interviewed on some podcast or something. Here's the quote. I like missionary. I like to be manhandled in bed. I've learned that if you want to have an orgasm during sex, you have to be on top. But missionary is my favorite. I want to be fucking manhandled. And then she shared the fact that her least favorite position, depending on the actual male member she is dealing with, her least favorite position is doggy because she says it can go in so deep that it hurts. End quote. Still isn't official, but they say Kevin Costner is done after season 5 with Yellowstone. We'll see. Patrick Mahomes' brother, Jackson, arrested in Kansas City for aggravated sexual battery. Birthdays today, Aaron Andrews, sideline reporter for Fox in the NFL games, 45. Kimora Lee Simmons from St. Louis, half Japanese, half black, and all brains. She married Russell Simmons, took over his baby fat clothing line, then divorced him. She's 48 today. Will Arnett, one of the funniest people on the planet, is 53. Anna Gasteyer, formerly of Saturday Night Live. Randy Travis, country music superstar, had a massive stroke in 2013. Haven't been the same since. First Grammy Awards were held on this date in 1959, and there were two simultaneous untelevised ceremonies in L.A. and New York because, get this, the music industry did not think that the stars, the recording artists, would want to travel just to get an award. Ha! 59 years ago today, 1964, the soap opera Another World premiered on NBC. 35 seasons. And the only reason I really mention it is because Morgan Freeman, Lindsay Lohan, Luke Perry, Brad Pitt, and Kelsey Grammer all appeared on that show before anybody had heard of them. 55 years ago, 1968, I remember it well, the Big Mac debuted at McDonald's. Mo died on this date, 1975, and I know a lot of people have forgotten about it. I never have, and I still think that this is when the country started to veer off in the wrong direction in terms of its view of youth in this country. It was Kent State. There's been a lot of stuff written about this since 1970, and a lot of the information is wrong. The truth of the situation is that they were stray bullets that killed the four people, the four students. Soldiers were poorly trained. The situation got out of control. People just started firing rifles, and the next thing you know, four dead in Ohio. One of the guys shot, one of the students shot, was on his way to ROTC class. And if you look at the lyrics of Ohio by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, tells the whole story. Should have been done long ago. People really believed that. People really believed it. That was the whole Nixon era. 1985 on this date, I moved into my very first house. I talked a little bit about it yesterday in Baldwin, right around the corner from Doug Wickenheiser from the St. Louis Blues. Man, did he have a peculiar sense of humor. He was always messing with me. I went out to get the paper one Sunday morning, and he had gone around the entire neighborhood and taken all of the lawn jockeys off the porches and stacked them up in front of my front door. He was the funniest guy and just the greatest guy. He used to come over and watch the fights. I would pay the $60 or the $80, whatever it is, you know, to watch Tyson fight or something like that. And he would bring the beer. My friend Jeff would bring snacks. And I would pay for the actual telecast. And we would sit there and we would watch. But, you know, especially back in those days out in Baldwin, I lived near Big Bend and Hannah Road. I'm driving home. It's like 1:30 in the morning and I'm just barely awake. And all of a sudden, you know, you feel the presence of something and you notice that there's two headlights coming up on your rear end. And now you see the headlights are basically on your bumper. You speed up. And now the other car speeds up. And now you go even faster and they speed up. Now you turn into your subdivision and they follow you in. Scared the shit out of me. It's 2:00 in the morning. It's Wickenheiser. Boy, I was sorry to see him go, and especially go the way he did, too. 1989, David Letterman brought his show to the Chicago Theater in the Windy City. I was up there watching that. Cadillac Man, a very, very easily forgotten Robin Williams movie with Tim Robbins in L.A. That's where I was on this date in 1990. I resumed my baseball pitching career after a 37-year layoff on this date in 1998. Thank you, Dave Eidelman. And on this date in 1988, knocking off the ever-powerful KC95 was JC and the Breakfast Club on Classic Rock 93.7 KSD, number one in adults. And we held on to that position for kind of something like 4 years. That's a little story the people at KC, they don't like to talk about. They don't like talking about getting beaten by The Rock either. But they especially don't like being reminded that for 4 years they lost against me. Wow, is that place in a lot of trouble right now. And as we said, today is May the 4th be with you.
We went to the phones moments ago because we know that people are just like out of their minds. Oh my God, Mark Hamill, I always wanted to ask him this question. And we got some sort of odd ones here, including, you know, Effingham, Illinois is right down the street from us, a couple of maybe 100 miles or so. And apparently the car that you drove, the right-hand drive car from Corvette Summer, is in some guy's collection in Effingham, Illinois. Ring any bells? Bring back any memories?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you let me know because kids still ask me if I got to keep that car. And I have to fudge the answer and say, gee, I don't even know where it is. I'm glad somebody's taking care of it.
There you go. Now, the right-hand drive car was so that you could lean out of the car and have more direct contact with the girls walking along the side of the street. Is that right?
You know, that sounds right. Yeah.
Like, right. All right. Did he, in fact, do a cameo in a crowd scene of episode one?
No, my son did, though.
Oh, oh no.
There we go.
Oh,
okay.
That's pretty neat.
That is neat.
Got it.
You know, I've never seen him. I mean, with the way they're able to, you know, computer generate multiples of crowds. You know, George can do so many things now with computer graphics. I don't even know if he's seen himself.
Yeah, yeah. When the original release of Star Wars occurred back in the 70s, my friend Gene Siskel from Siskel and Ebert of the movies probably passed away. He's a big fan of Saturday Night Fever. He'd seen it something like, you know, 50 or 60 times. And one of the things he liked about it was watching the movie and watching the imperfections.
Right.
When the movie came out in the 70s and you sat there in the theater, did you catch continuity errors? Is there anything in the movie, in the original cut of the movie, where you're like, oh boy, I hope they don't see that? And maybe people did or didn't see it.
I remember that it was pretty rocky in certain places. I mean, things didn't work the way they wanted them to. They cut away from R2 just seconds before he ran into a wall, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
George called it the most expensive low-budget movie ever made.
Right.
I think it's appropriate, by the way, that you're interviewing me right after the Viagra and Cialis ad.
Yeah, well,
I didn't know it cost $3 a pill for the ad.
Hey, we're paying big money for those stiffies, you know?
It's $3 an erection.
That's right. Somehow when it's all over with, Carrie, it seems like money well spent.
Worth it!
Yeah, exactly. All right, so your new book published by Simon & Schuster, it's your memoirs, it's Wishful Drinking. You appeared on 60 Minutes a couple of years back, and you were talking about problems with your love life. And I still remember this, because I was single at the time, because I remember this. And you said, you know, your friends always say, oh, Carrie, you know, as soon as you stop looking, you'll find someone.
Oh, yes.
And you said, or how about this? No, you don't. Tell me, please tell me that somebody's got their hooks into that luscious flesh of yours these days.
Maybe sometimes that flesh, and there's a lot more of it.
But we got something going on these days?
Don't ask me that. Well, all right, so that, yeah, you know, occasionally I you know, hire a hooker, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's for that. You've made me blush.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, that I've done my work here.
That's really, really hard to do. Awesome!
Yeah. Long, long time ago, in a galaxy far away, Naboo was under an attack. And I thought me and Qui-Gon Jinn could talk the Federation into maybe cutting them a little slack. But their response, it didn't thrill us. They locked the doors and tried to kill us. We escaped from that gas, then met Jar Jar and Boss Nass. We took a bongo from the scene and we went to feed to see the queen. We all wound up on Tatooine. That's where we found this boy. Oh my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Did you know this junkyard slave isn't even old enough to shave? But he can use the force, they say. Do you see him hitting on the queen? Though he's just 9 and she's 14. Yeah, he's probably gonna marry her someday. Jedi. Now we finally got to Coruscant, the Jedi Council we knew would want to see how good the boy could be. So we took him there and we told the tale how his midichlorians were off the scale and he might fulfill that prophecy. Of course, could he bring balance to the force? They interviewed the kid. Oh, training they forbid, because Yoda sensed in him much fear. And Qui-Gon said, now listen here, just stick it in your pointy ear. I still Jedi. We caught a ride back to Naboo, 'cause Queen Amidala wanted to. I frankly would have liked to stay. We all fought in that epic war, and it wasn't long at all before little Hotshot flew his plane and saved the day. And in the end, some Gungans died. Some ships blew up and some pilots fried. A lot of folks were croaking. The battle droids were broken. And the Jedi I admire most met up with Darth Maul and now he's toast. I'm still here and he's a ghost. I guess I'll train this boy. And I was singing, my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. We were singing, my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.